predecessors. The essay, in the beginning, acknowledges my generalized debt to all that has happened since the Big Bang, the evolution of single cells into dinosaurs and the first of our species, and the civilizing contributions of the 100 billion persons who have lived on Earth during the past 50,000 years. In this essay, we begin taking names. But do not fear what follows. There will be no need for the kind of directory of 160 characters one needs to navigate Tolstoy's War and Peace. Various members of the family did some pre-internet digging that did not go back very far. My daughter, Julie, is the primary post-internet researcher and the source of most of the family's current genealogical information. First, some of the basics. They will only take a minute. My father, Wendell Andrew Leroy Johnson, B. 1906, M. 1929, D. 1965, was the youngest of six children. My mother, Edna Buckwolf Johnson, B. 1905, M. 1929, D. 1989, was the middle child of three sisters. There are but five principals in addition to my parents. My mother's parents, Max Buckwold, B. 1875, M. 1901, D. 1956, and Bertha Watka Buckwold, B. 1883, M. 1901, D. 1931. My father's parents, Andrew Johnson, B. 1860, M. 1892, D. 1942, and Mary Helen Tarnstrom Johnson, B. 1866, M. 1892, D. 1925. And Bertha Watka's mother, Emma Cole Morgan Watka, B. 1860, M. 1883, D. 1941, who lived with us during the first 6 years of my life. The wives of both my grandfathers died before I was born. I only met Andrew Johnson on one occasion I can recall, and that was before I was 6 years old. Therefore, Max Buckwold, whom we called Pop, and Emma Cole Morgan Watka, who died when I was six, were the only grown-ups from prior generations with whom I had contact. During the 19th century, the population of the United States grew 15-fold, from 5 or 6 million in 1800, to 23 million in 1850, and 76 million by 1900. By 1930, the last census before the year of my birth, 1934, there were 123 million persons living in America. The most recent census, in 2010, put the number of Americans at nearly 310 million. In 1850, two-thirds of all Americans were farmers. Prior to that, the percentages were even higher. By 1916, their percentage declined to 32%. By 1933 to 25%, and today it is little more than 1%. During the years 1850 to 1930, when the U.S. population exploded fivefold, from 23 to 123 million persons, 25 million of that increase were immigrants from Europe. 5 million came from Germany, and most of them, like Max Buckwold, settled somewhere in the Midwest. Why mention population data? To understand my grandparents and great-grandparents' lives requires at least a minimal understanding of the times during which they lived and how those times differed from the America in which we live. Theirs was a much less populated and simpler America than the one we know. Iowa's first non-Native American settlers started arriving as recently as 1830. The area became a state in 1846. Before the railroads came in the 1850s and 1860s, the Mormons pulled their own carts by hand from Iowa to Utah, arriving in the early 1850s. Horses and oxen provided farmers transportation to markets along dirt roads, muddy after a rainstorm, and the horsepower to pull plows and wagons. There were no networks to provide electricity, clean water, or sewers, not to mention radio and television programming and an internet. My parents grew up on farms. Both Max and Andrew were cattlemen. A quarter to a third of Americans were farmers. During their lifetimes, many farmers and their children were born, raised, married, worked, and died on farms, some never leaving the county of their birth. Today, almost one-third of Americans have a four-year college degree. When my parents were in high school, half of the American population had less than 8 years of education. From 1900 to 1920, the number of BA degrees granted annually increased from 27,000 to 37,000 to 48,000, of which only a quarter to a third were women. Even with the additional increase in college-educated adults after 1920, 20 years later only 4.6% of American adults had a college degree in 1940. That both my parents A. left the farm, B. enrolled in college, and C. graduated, Dad with a PhD, was remarkable. In the 21st century, we are not likely to know many farmers and certainly few, if any, engaged in the kind of mixed agriculture, small family farms that my parents and grandparents knew. Moreover, my grandparents were immigrants. That was also common. In 1900, over 123,000 of Iowa's 2.2 million residents were, like Max Buchwald, born in Germany. No American who is not of 100% Native American heritage can claim to be a pure American. The rest of us are hyphenated descendants of immigrants, in my case Swedish Americans and German Americans. Some immigrants were invaders. Others came in peace. All too many were involved in driving the original Americans from their homes, killing many in the process. Moreover, my people arrived in the 19th century. None could claim membership in the Daughters of the American Revolution. They were part of the waves of immigration that brought to our shores those who helped build 20th century America. They arrived with little or nothing, and no alternative but a life of very hard work if they were to survive and raise families. It was a time of strong ethnic ties where they lived, went to school and church, shopped, and how they voted. There could be an inter-ethnic distance, unfamiliarity, suspicion, prejudice, even hatred and hostility, especially toward whatever immigrant group happened to be the last to arrive. As a third-generation immigrant and first-generation raised off the farm, their history and mine has played a role in shaping who I am. Many of these immigrants did well financially and as community members. Neither Andrew nor Max joined the robber barons and others in the 1% of their day, but my guess is that they would have been in the top 10% to 25%. Andrew was a Kansas cowboy, riding horseback, driving his cattle across the state to the Kansas City stockyards. But he was also reportedly the first in his county to purchase an automobile and amass a substantial collection of books. That collection included a multi-volume history of the world, if I recall the title correctly, that Dad read from as a child and later kept in our home. There are only two other stories I recall regarding Andrew. One involves his driving. When his eyesight had declined to the extent that he drove his car into a ditch in his late 70s or early 80s, the family insisted he give up driving. He rejected the suggestion with the assertion, "I can still see large moving objects." The other involves his death in a doctor's office, where he was waiting to see the doctor for what would otherwise have been his last routine physical exam. Although there is no record of precisely when Andrew reached America, it was probably very close to the time that Max arrived, in 1890. Andrew and Mary Tarnstrom were married in 1892. I'm guessing they would have met, and married, in the U.S. and their first child, Leonard Francis, my Uncle Loaf, was born in Kansas in 1893. My mother is the source of most of what is known about Mox's 19th and early 20th century life. Mox was born in Berg off Femarn, the main town on a little, 70-square-mile island in the Baltic Sea off the northern coast of Germany. Settled in the early Middle Ages by a Slavic tribe, it long retained confusing, simultaneous and alternating ties to both Denmark and Germany, until sometime after the Second Schleswig War of 1864, when it unambiguously became a part of Germany. The Buchwald family name first appeared in Femarn records sometime between 1450 and 1500. Max's parents, Johannes Buchwald and Doris Wendorf Buchwald, were born in 1835 and 1840, respectively, which means, if both were born on Femarn, that Max is the son of German-speaking Danish subjects. It also means that Max, an only child, spent his childhood with parents in their 40s and 50s rather than their 20s. The story told me is that his grandfather was a ship's captain who died at sea during a storm off the coast of Femarn. The story did not indicate whether the ship was used for transportation or fishing, but two of Mox's relatives, Lottie and Rhea, were fishmongers in Berg. I don't know their last names, or relationship to Mox. Mother, a skilled photographer, took and framed a large photo of one of them cutting up fish, during a trip she and Dad made to the island. The picture still hangs in our living room. Mox's father, among other things, wove and sold the heavy ropes used on the local ships. The weaving began by tying the starting end of the fibers at one end of the barn. The weaver walked backwards, toward the open barn door, carefully weaving the fibers like a mother weaving a braid on her school-bound daughter until reaching the desired length of the rope. When Mox left the island for America in 1890 and his father asked why he wanted to leave, Mox replied, "I don't want to spend the rest of my life walking backwards." When he later returned for a visit, his U.S. passport record indicates 1914, very well dressed and groomed. The story is that his father greeted him with his boyhood name and said, "Well, Matty, I see that you haven't been walking backwards." Mox recalled as a boy walking with his father to the local beer garden on Sundays, where they would simply sit for a long afternoon. His father would bring the cigar that lasted many weeks, order one glass of beer, and young Max would watch as the rings slowly accumulated on the side of the glass. Once the beer sipping was finished, and the cigar was put out and saved for the next week, they would walk home. Little is known, at least by me, of his life in America from 1890, when he arrived, until 1901 when he was in Davenport, Iowa, studied double-entry bookkeeping at a business college, and married Bertha Watka. Since he left Germany at age 15, he could not have had much more than the U.S. equivalent of a junior high school education, and we don't know how much additional education he received in Davenport, only that he certainly put whatever it was to very good use in business. Sometime between 1901 and 1905, Mox and Bertha settled in Galva, Iowa, ultimately building and living in what Mother referred to as the home place, a mile or so west and north of downtown Galva. How and when he could acquire farmland is unknown, only that much of it was north of the home place, and that he succeeded in his lifetime goal of being able to leave an acreage to each of his three girls. I have a foggy memory that he began by selling meat out of a cart he pulled along Galva's dirt roads, though that sounds both a little too romantic and unlikely as a business plan for someone whose customers are equally involved in a mixed agriculture that includes livestock. When a farmer's livestock died, they needed to be hauled away. Their dead bodies could be purchased cheaply, or perhaps free for the removal. South of the home place, Mox built one of the very few rendering plants around northwest Iowa. He brought the animals to the rendering plant and cooked them into animal feed and possibly gelatin from the hooves and sold the products for a profit. All of which brings us to the years 1905 in Iowa and 1906 in Kansas and the story of my mother and father.